Hey everybody, thanks for joining us on a special episode of The Baptist Bias. And before we get started introducing our guests, I wanted to play a quick video was actually from a Tucker Carlson interview. And it kind of gives us just a little bit of an introduction to our guest. I don't know how much our audience is familiar with the Raw Egg Nationalist on Twitter, but I want to get kind of a little sample here, introduction. So let's go ahead and see if we can play a sample video here from Tucker Carlson. It looks like we're just taking just 1 second to pull that up. Give us 1 second here, and we'll get this pulled up. Now, our guest is actually in the UK, and so he's going to be joining us from afar, from across the pond, but let's see. I think we're ready. We can go ahead and play this clip whenever we got it.
So Raw Egg Nationalist is maybe someone you haven't heard of. Quite well known online. Very smart. Writes anonymously, often at The American Mind, and certainly on Twitter. He is the leader of a movement that's looking outside the mainstream for ways to get healthy. We spoke to him for a new Tucker Carlson Originals documentary, The End of Men. Here's part of the conversation. If the bro scientists have a spiritual leader, it would be a man who calls himself Raw Egg National. Here's his message.
The enemy today is what I like to call soy globalism. The globalist aim is to destroy nations and local communities, and they do this by isolating communities and sickening them through food, and also through so-called medicine, and all the dreadful chemicals we're exposed to on a daily basis. The globalists want you to be fat, sick, depressed and isolated, the better to control you and to milk you for as much economic value as they can before they kill you. That's soy globalism in a nutshell. Own nothing, live in the pod, eat the soy. The best response to this is a strong politics of nationalism. The nation is only as strong as the individuals who make it up, and that's where raw eggs come in. Eggs are a superfood, packed with protein, fats, vitamins, minerals, and anabolic cholesterol, the absolute opposite of the disgusting rubbish that the globalists want you to eat. Eggs are cheap. You can't patent an egg. By making the individual strong, you make the nation strong. I'm Raw Egg Nationalist. I'm an Anon right-wing bodybuilder, and I dispense red pill fitness and health information to the masses. Why should somebody believe me? Well, I'm just channeling the wisdom of the ancients, really. I'm a vessel. Raw eggs were once upon a time an essential part of the bodybuilder's diet, and that was due to a man called Vince Gironda, who was a bodybuilding maverick.
All right,
Vince
Gironda advocated. It looks like we got a kind of an introduction here to as an alternative. Our guest, Raw Egg Nationalist, and I don't know if he picked all of that B-roll for this particular premiere here, but welcome to the show, Raw Egg Nationalist. How's it going?
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
I want to make sure that we're not having any technical difficulties here because I didn't quite catch you, and I just want to make sure our production crew. Sorry for any technical.
Can you hear me now?
Just make sure we can hear each other there.
Can you hear me now?
I don't know if it just cut out for me only or if it's for everybody, but
as we're
pulling you up, I feel like if anybody makes it onto Tucker Carlson, then they have officially arrived. And so that's, you know, one of the things that I really appreciate about bringing you on here. Just give us one more second here. We'll get that audio figured out in just a second, but apologize for that. Whenever you have to go across the pond, I guess it just takes anything can happen as far as technical difficulties. But this is a special stream. We're not doing our normal air time. Usually we're airing at 8 p.m. on Tuesdays, but we like to do special streams and especially accommodating people from afar. I also have some other clips that we want to pull up and show here in a little bit, but I know that there was a documentary that you had been kind of a part of. I'm not sure exactly. I want to get your feedback on this as well, but when Tucker was on the Fox News Nation, he had made a documentary called The End of Men, and I'm hoping to even play the trailer of that here when we get a second. But I want to make sure, can we play that trailer, or are we still trying to get the audio figured up? Yeah, you can go ahead and play that trailer too if we want to take one more second before we get our audio figured out.
Do hard things. Testosterone levels are declining 10% per decade. Chemical and pharmaceutical companies are poisoning us, but you're not allowed to notice this is happening.
This is a chemical warfare on our country.
You have to have strong men. If you don't, it's not going to go well.
What's wrong with our food is that not food and reliant on industrial processes.
For many of these compounds, there's clear evidence that some of these chemicals causes problems with reproduction.
Picking something hard to do every day will increase your testosterone.
We need a renaissance.
Getting into a healthier state, being a healthier person.
That's when you really start to see improvement.
No one in Washington seems interested at all. It's a joke to them.
If men can't reproduce, then the world's over.
We're headed for a calamity.
Technical glitch is my stupid headphones got unplugged, but I should be able to hear you loud and clear now. How's it going?
It's going very well. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Sorry about that.
No, not at all. Don't worry.
Now, so you got to be a part of this documentary in some way. Is this something they consulted you on, or did they just throw you in there? How did that work?
So if I remember correctly, because it was 2 years ago now, actually, by God. As far as I can remember, one of Tucker's producers got in contact with me on Twitter, and he said, you won't believe what Tucker wants to do. He wants to do this documentary about testosterone decline. He wants to feature right-wing bodybuilders, which is, you know, I'm a right-wing bodybuilder, member of this movement, and we're going to do an extravaganza. We're going to have a big documentary about testosterone decline, and it's going to be crazy, and it's going to melt people's heads and drive liberals crazy. And it did. It really did. So mission accomplished. But it was a strange thing. I mean, none of us really quite realized just how much of how viral it was going to go. And, you know, we had all the big liberal talking heads, commentators ranting and raving about it, frothing at the mouth. It was incredibly fun to be a part of.
That's great. You would think chicken farmers all across the nation would be like supporting you, but no. Tell us a little bit about yourself, because you know, that's kind of my introduction to who you are. But we'd like to know. Mm. You know, you're in UK, is that correct?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, for my sins, I am English. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with being English. Tell it, you know, I think at one point you were kind of just this anonymous guy or something, Anon or something.
Yep.
But now you've kind of done some public interviews. Like, why Rog Nationalist? Why, you know, this persona? Did it happen just naturally, or?
Yeah, well, so it was a funny thing. So, I mean, I started out as an anonymous poster on Twitter. I didn't really come to Twitter to do anything other than just sort of look at other people's tweets. So I was following this chap called Bronze Age Pervert, who is a big figure in the scene, in the right-wing bodybuilder scene, and I was laughing at his tweets. This was sort of 2019, early 2020, beginning of the pandemic. And then I started posting. I got behind this hashtag, Raw Egg Nationalism, and called myself the Raw Egg Nationalist, not really thinking that anything very much would come of it. And then, I mean, it's been a bit of a whirlwind, really, but I wrote a cookbook in the summer of 2020, the Raw Egg Nationalism cookbook, featuring...
Interesting timeline for egg release, 2020.
Yeah. Yeah, quite. Yeah, I mean, there was I had a lot of spare time in the pandemic, so I put it to good use. But yes, I was anonymous. I released this cookbook, which did really well. It was a digital release first, then it was a paperback, then it was a hardback. And after that, things started to get a little bit crazy. And then there was the Tucker documentary in 2022. And that's when it really started to go mad. But I was anonymous the whole time. getting more and more popular. And then a month, 6 weeks ago, I was doxxed by this. So I had my identity revealed by this activist organization in the UK called Hope Not Hate, that's obsessed with internet, right wingers on the internet. And they wrote this expose of me that's had absolutely no discernible effect other than actually to give my career a boost. So there I'm very go. Grateful to them actually for revealing my identity.
That's funny. Well, when it comes to raw eggs, tell me about this. Mm. Is this like now become your persona, or are you just like a huge champion of raw eggs? Like, do I need to be eating like 20 of these a day, or like what's going on?
Well, it depends what you want to do, really. So, I mean, the patron saint of raw egg nationalism is this chap called Vince Gironda, who was a classic bodybuilder in the 1950s and 1960s. He trained Arnold Schwarzenegger, Frank Zane, other people, Larry Scott, first Mr. Olympia. And he was a very, very vocal proponent of natural bodybuilding. He hated steroids. So the 1950s, early 1960s, that was when steroids were really starting to be established within the sport of bodybuilding. And, you know, more and more bodybuilders were taking them. And Vince Gironda was very anti-steroids. And he had this whole natural system that he created, built around the consumption of raw eggs, which might sound funny, but actually cholesterol, which is, you know, eggs are loaded with cholesterol. Cholesterol is extremely anabolic. It's a hormone precursor. You know, cholesterol is a precursor for the sex hormones, testosterone, estrogen, etc. And Vince Gironda had this crazy theory that the more eggs you ate, the more cholesterol you consumed, the more testosterone your body would produce. And actually, in recent years, in recent decades, and he's been, the scientific community has actually substantiated this and shown that he was right, and that cholesterol is actually even more of an anabolic substance than protein. So there's a closer relationship between cholesterol consumption and muscle growth than there is between protein consumption and muscle growth, for example. So it's a I mean, it's not just a meme. It's a real thing. I mean, there is real science behind the consumption of large quantities of eggs, raw eggs. But it does hark back to this 1960s bodybuilder, Vince Gironda, who is my avatar, actually, on Twitter. The laser-eyed Gironda that I created way back in the beginning, 4 years ago.
Well, I'm kind of curious, though, like, I love eggs. Is there really a huge difference between just me, you know, frying them up versus just, you know, downing them raw?
Well, I mean, one of the things about consuming raw eggs is that you can consume them in significant quantities, you know. So if you've seen Cool Hand Luke, for example, the famous Paul Newman film, you'll know that he accepts a challenge to eat 50 boiled eggs, and it basically kills him. You can consume 50 raw eggs very, very easily. You could consume 50 raw eggs in a minute. There's absolutely no problem knocking back or slonking. That's the technical term, but slonking. But there's no problem knocking back 50 raw eggs. So it's one way to get eggs in significant quantity. But there are also other benefits as well. Not cooking the eggs preserves the certain of the nutrients. It preserves the cholesterol. It preserves micronutrients and enzymes. I mean, there's a host of benefits, but I mean, I always say to people, look, if you absolutely can't stomach consuming raw eggs, then just eat eggs. I mean, eggs are great whichever way you have them. You don't have to eat them raw if you don't want to. Maybe I would suggest instead cook them, you know, if you're going to boil them, soft boil them. If you're going to poach them gently, etc. You fry them, leave the yolk uncooked, but you know, cooked eggs are just as good as raw, really. Eat eggs is the main message, I would say.
Yeah, I guess I probably kill all the nutrients, but I just really like fried eggs. So, my wife likes them runny, like over easy. So she likes it where the egg yolk is real runny and she can dip toast in it. But, you know, it seems like today there's just an attack on just masculinity in general. And I think the raw eggs is just maybe just like really emphasizing masculinity a little bit. So maybe that's why they're just so provoked. But, you know, I'm also kind of curious because I've never been to UK. I have some friends that have visited. I have a friend that's a pastor there. But I'm just kind of interested. Like, it seems like it's kind of tumultuous what's going on over there. And even social media and people are, you know, I guess in danger if they post something too provocative. So, like, what is kind of going on over there? Because I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, the UK's in a bad way, and it's been in a bad way for a long time, actually. So this isn't a recent development, I would say. We've been heading in quite a sinister direction politically for quite some time. And but now it's starting to gain international attention, I think, after the riots that took place recently. So there were big riots in the UK. Three little girls under the age of 10 were murdered at a dance class. And the rumor was initially that it was a Muslim migrant who'd done it. It wasn't a Muslim migrant, but it was the son of a Rwandan immigrant. So it was a second generation immigrant, a 17-year-old boy who walked into a dance class with a machete and started hacking at little children, killed three, injured, I think, half a dozen others and an adult. Anyway, there were big riots that were coordinated and inflamed on social media. And that's really been the pretext for a pretty serious crackdown on freedom of speech in this country, and which will continue as well. So people have already been jailed. People have already been sent to jail for their part in the riots, either taking part directly, physically on the ground, or, you know, through social media posts, for incitement, basically. But it looks like the Labour government is going to bring in some pretty draconian anti-free speech laws. They're going to crack down on social media, I think. I mean, they've got Elon Musk particularly in their sights because Elon Musk has been quite defiant in response to various politicians in the UK, senior politicians saying, you know, oh, Twitter is a weapon of disinformation. People shouldn't be allowed to use Twitter anonymously. There should be restrictions on what people can say on Twitter. Elon Musk needs to be held to account, etc. And he's really pushed back very hard. And he's actually mocked the British government as well, which they hate. I mean, they really hate being, you know, being mocked and made to look stupid. But yes, I think that it's not a great time, really, to be a free thinker in the UK. It's not a good time to be on the right. It's not a good time to be in opposition to the government, to be in opposition to mass migration. And it's probably going to get worse in the short term, I think, certainly in the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, at least in America, you know, and people aren't really being arrested for things they're saying online, generally speaking. It'd have to be pretty extreme, but mostly it's just censorship or canceling or blocked. I mean, we've been banned on almost everything, or shadow banned, and so that's almost pales in comparison to someone actually facing prison time or being harassed by the government over there. So, you know, I definitely can empathize with that situation. It's definitely frustrating. And there still seems like to be a lot of Englishmen in the UK, because when I was looking at statistics, it seemed like there was about 50 million people in the UK that are classified as, quote, white. Now, I think that they kind of combined Asian with like an Anglo-Saxon. But, I mean, that's a lot of people, you know, for the UK that are still kind of being demonized as a whole. And I'm not sure what's going to happen.
Well, what's interesting, I mean, people often talk about the UK in very stark terms. And they often say, you know, the UK has fallen. It's over for the UK, etc. But actually, I mean, the demographic situation in the UK isn't anywhere near as bad as it is in the US, actually. I mean, you know, the white British people are still a significant majority. I mean, it's something like it's over 75%. So it's certainly demographically, it's certainly not over. But nevertheless, it's very, very hard for white British people. I mean, they're not allowed to organize themselves as white British. They're not allowed to represent their interests. They're not allowed to sort of speak up as a group. And And now, as a result of these riots, and we've got a serious, serious crackdown on freedom of speech, which is only going to make it more difficult, I think, for the native British people basically to represent their interests and to speak up. And Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, said in response to the riots, it doesn't matter what the motivation is. He actually used those words. He said, it doesn't matter. There's no legitimacy to these protests. This is just criminal behavior, and we're going to put people in jail and throw away the key, and that's it. And so, you know, the government sent a very, very clear message, I think, to the British people.
It's wrong,
the white Brits.
I almost wonder if it's going to get to a point where masculinity is criminal. Like just advocating for genuine masculine traits is going to somehow become a terroristic type activity, because I want to go to an article. Sorry to cut you off there, but I want to go to an article here that I had found, and let me see if I can get this pulled up. But it was Psychology Today. It's Article 3 that we have. I don't know if we can pull that up on our screen. If not, I can get it on my screen. But it's kind of interesting how they just start this particular article from Psychology Today. If you can't just find it, you can just pull up my screen. I've got it on there. All right. So Psychology Today, new findings on toxic masculinity. And it says, this is the first line. Quote, I'm not saying all men are terrorists. That's how it just starts. It says, I'm saying that the vast majority of those involved in acts of terror are men. So it just like instantly talks about toxic masculinity, and it's suggesting that toxic masculinity or masculinity somehow linked to terrorism specifically. And that's just a trigger word to me just because of thinking about the UK. And thinking about like this specific person, Sophia Walker, who had that quote, is part of the UK Women's Equality Party. So this is someone that's in the UK advocating for this kind of information. And this is a little bit older article, but it seems like the climate has only maybe gotten more extreme here as far as their view of negativity towards masculinity. And they say not only toxic masculinity, but even traditional masculinity in this particular article. But this is what it describes traditional masculinity as. Risk-taking, it says kind of down here below. Risk-taking, dominance, it says. Here's some of the other things. Negative outcomes. Anti-femininity, risk, adventure, achievement, violence, avoidance of appearing weak. Which I'm just kind of crazy, like, achievement is now a bad thing. Like, hey, you better not achieve anything or have an adventure or take any risks. Like, this is kind of crazy to me how this is.
Yeah, what they're doing is they are folding. They've created this new definition, you know, toxic masculinity, and it is just everything you would associate, the kind of very basic things you would associate with being a man, like, you know, what did they say about avoiding displays of weakness? It's like being tough for the benefit of other people, you know, not displaying weakness. I mean, that's somehow, rather than being a virtue, which is what it's been for the vast majority of human history, that kind of stoical disposition, you know, a man who bears pain patiently and doesn't burden others with his problem, all of a sudden, that's toxic. You know, that's a bad thing. That's not something to be aspired to. It's actually something to be vilified. It's crazy. But you know, one of the funny things as well about these riots in the UK, just to go back to that for a moment, is that in response to the riots, the Home Secretary said that they're going to bring in new laws classifying being an incel as being a terrorist. I don't know if you saw that. So it's like, no. You know, not being a man and not being romantically successful with the opposite sex is now a kind of form of terrorism, right? It's crazy. It's crazy what's going on.
What's not a terrorist at this point?
Well, quite. I mean, and the other thing that's interesting actually and quite funny is that I don't know if you saw, but at the DNC, Dana Bash, there was a clip that was going viral, and I posted it on my Twitter. Dana Bash was saying explicitly that the Democrats' platform this time around is a low testosterone platform, basically. She said, look, we are offering a platform of alternative masculinity, because if you remember then Hulk Hogan, I posted this a couple of days ago, maybe yesterday or the day before, but okay. Hulk Hogan turned up at the RNC, didn't he, and ripped off, yeah, that's it there. Hulk Hogan ripped off his T-shirt, and he had a Trump Vance T-shirt underneath, and he did the classic, you know, Hulkamania skit. And then Dana Bash was saying, look, the DNC, this is for men who don't want to be Hulk Hogan. This is for men who don't like shooting guns. This is for men who don't want to have big muscles. This is for men basically with low testosterone. She did talk about testosterone, and she said, you know, maybe actually men need to have less testosterone in order to get behind the idea of having a female president. She actually said that in this clip.
That's probably crazy. True. I mean, it doesn't even sound like she's saying anything inaccurate. It's just that it's kind of evil, no. I guess. From my perspective, you know, I want to go back to my screen for a second.
Making it explicit for the first time, you know, because there's been a culture war about testosterone, or a biological war, whatever you want to call it, for some time, about the political implications and the cultural implications of declining testosterone. And that's what the Tucker Carlson documentary was about. And when the Tucker Carlson documentary came out, then there was all sorts of, you know, mainstream media fact-checking and commentators and talking heads all saying, you know, testosterone isn't political. This is a conspiracy theory. This is nonsense, you know. Testosterone doesn't matter in terms of politics. And then yet, 2 years later, at the DNC in 2024, the platform is explicitly based on an appeal to men who have low testosterone. It's crazy. Right.
Yeah, and it's almost like they're embracing that meme that everybody shares, where it's like good men create good times, and good times creates, you know, soft men, yeah. And then soft men create harmony. It's like they're literally just explicitly like embracing that, like we need soft men or something to bring in hard times. But there's a spiritual connection to this for me, and I want to pull up just a few verses, because I like to look at things through, you know, the lens of scripture as well. And, you know, the Bible talks about this as well. It says in 1 Kings, it says, this is David talking to his son Solomon. I go the way of all the earth. He's about to die. And he says, be thou strong, therefore, and show thyself a man. It also says in Proverbs 24, verse 5, a wise man is strong, yea, a man of knowledge increaseth strength. The Bible says in Luke 11, verse 21, when a strong man armed keepeth his palace, his goods are in peace. So there's a few verses, and I could go to a lot, but the Bible actually emphasizes the idea of being strong, of course, mentally and spiritually, but also even physically. And I think the devil and the enemy knows this, and they realize they can't rob a strong man. And there's a – I need to pull up another verse here, because – the Bible talks about the devil and trying to take someone's goods in the New Testament. Yeah, this is the verse I want to pull up. In Mark chapter 3, it says, no man can enter in a strong man's house and spoil his goods, except he will first bind the strong man, and then he will spoil his house. And I think that this obviously is dealing with a specific situation, but it could be extrapolated to the concept that the enemy knows that they can't take over strong men, they can't take over a strong nation. They have to first, quote, bind him. And, you know, maybe, you know, they're not necessarily going to use traditional rope or anything like that. They're just simply going to make men weak, and they're going to bind him with soy. They're going to bind him with, you know, online pressure tactics and TV and just having a lazy white-collar job and just all the different things that are basically just creating him to not be strong and binding him to online pornography, binding him just all these different, you know, horrors and just different things that are out there as traps, so that they can then steal his goods, steal his land, steal his property, steal his rights. And they realize if men are strong that they're not going to be able to take that over. And I feel like there's an agenda here. That's a satanic agenda that a lot of these people are under the guise of, that are trying to make men weak on purpose to steal their goods, steal their women, steal their land, steal their money, and even steal their soul. You know, of course, I come with Baptist bias, but I'm just kind of curious. I've heard, you know, you say something about how it needs to be mentally strong for spirituality and stuff like that, but that's my perspective.
It's worth remembering, I think, that in the ancient Greek world, slaves were specifically prohibited from using the gymnasia. So working out, exercising, physical culture was an essential part of being a citizen in the ancient Greek world. You know, men went to the gymnasia, they worked out together, they built their bodies, they also interacted with one another socially and you know, developed friendship, etc. But slaves were specifically barred from doing that. And they were barred from doing that for a reason, because their masters didn't want them to develop courage, didn't want them to develop themselves physically, didn't want to develop themselves morally as well.
Well, nutritionally, and they're probably deficit too, right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So it's an example from a very long time ago, but I think it has very clear resonances with today. I mean, the ideal citizen is just basically a passive consumer, is somebody who doesn't exercise, watches television, watches Netflix all the time, eats junk food, consumes internet pornography on a regular basis, all this kind of stuff. I think that the government fosters dependency because it makes people easier to rule. It's just the truth, you know. High testosterone men are much harder to govern than low testosterone men. High testosterone men are likely to do things like speak up when they disagree with something. And, you know, in my work and on Twitter, when I post, you know, I often post and write about testosterone studies that have been done in a laboratory setting, in a research setting. And you find all these studies that show, for example, that if you give a man a dose of testosterone, he's more likely to speak up in a situation where he holds an opinion that is in disagreement with the majority. So they've done studies like that, for instance. You know, men with higher testosterone are more likely to stand up for minority positions, which they believe are right, in the face of social pressure. There are all sorts of studies like that that show that actually testosterone is the biological underpinning of masculinity. It's the biological underpinning of all sorts of positive masculine behaviors, basically. You know, we're told that testosterone is the cause of aggression, and it's actually something that needs to be eliminated in the modern world because we've moved kind of beyond our caveman roots, if you will. But
here's the thing: don't we want aggression towards rapists and violent criminals? It's funny that they're so against this toxic masculinity, but then they need it to, number one, defend themselves from attackers, evil people. Of course, they like to pick and choose when they want toxic masculinity, right? And even women leaders, women governors, they need men to enforce their edicts and to enforce their laws, because there's no such thing as a woman army that's going to go and force a bunch of men to obey their will in opposition. Of course, you can get weak men to be basically nagged into submission. But generally speaking, women do not have the physical prowess to actually force their will against armed and combatant men. And so you're forced to have strong men, period. You know, that's just kind of a denial of reality. And I think that some of our presidents in times past, some of our leaders in time past recognize this. You know, the UK has not always been like this. And I greatly appreciate some of the heritage and history of the UK. You know, I use a King James Bible. I greatly appreciate what the British and the country of England did, and they were very strong for a very long time. And I would argue again that their strength stemmed and emanated from the King James Bible and from the blessing of God. And when they turn away from God, you bring in Satanism, which is this effeminizing of the culture and effeminizing of men and allowing them to be taken over through oppression and these bad tactics. But even people that aren't even that religious can at least recognize the implications of this. And I know that JFK, specifically a president of our past, who also made note of this. I want to play another quick clip here from JFK about public health and school. So let's play just a few minutes of this, and then we'll get some final thoughts on that.
They had a classical sense going all the way back to the Greek era of what it took to move the body well without injury, with mastery of movement and control.
Those of us who remember John Kennedy, he affected our lives dramatically. He had a vigor, he had a youth, he had an energy. He took La Sierra High School and made that the poster child of his program to make America a healthy place, because he understood that if America was healthy, physically healthy, it would be mentally, spiritually, emotionally, patriotically healthy.
I welcome this opportunity to speak to the people of America about a subject which I believe to be most important, and that is the subject of physical fitness. And I speak not only as President of the United States, but also as a parent of two children who I hope will grow up with those qualities of vigor and energy which we identify with the best of America. This should be a matter of concern to us all. A country is as strong, really, as its citizens. And I think that mental and physical health, mental and physical vigor, go hand in hand.
Ready up! Last pitch, hook! Five sets, start on, ready!
I hope that we will not find a day in the United States when all of us are spectators, except for a few who are out on the field. I hope all Americans will be on the field. This is a subject which should be of interest to us all.
It is possible for young men to achieve difficult physical feats if they're motivated in the right direction.
And I hope when we have seen the astonishing results which we have seen, where we've been able in the short space of 2 and 3 months to change the physical habits and strength of our children, that this will spread to every school district in the United States. That all of us will participate, and in so doing, we'll be better citizens and happier ones. This is a challenge for us all, children, boys and girls, college students, mothers and fathers. And all of us, I think, should welcome it. I hope all of you will join.
Pause this or kill it. But, I mean, honestly, this is actually, there's a lot of information about this. But this is the 1960s, a particular high school in California where they actually took physical fitness seriously. JFK is pretty famous for, you know, emphasizing physical fitness in a few different speeches that he had in the 1960s. And I really like something he said. I hope that we're not all just spectators in a few years, but we're all on the field. And unfortunately, it seems like his warning here became a reality, that the vast majority of Americans are simply just at home, fat, in a chair, watching football or watching soccer or something, and they themselves would have a heart attack if they even ran for like 30 seconds. And it's really sad, because if you see this video, it's kind of inspiring. And if there was 10 million American men like this, you would think this is a force to not be reckoned with. But that's just not what we see in America today. That's not what we see really in very many countries anymore. It's just a complete a loss of masculinity in general in our country. And I think it's very concerning. So I appreciate people like you that are out there advocating for traditional masculinity and healthy diet and you know, even just kind of sticking it to the left wing. I just like the fact that left wingers' heads explode. So I think this video would probably do that just in and of itself. But have you seen this before?
I have. So that the La Sierra thing and the JFK speech about physical fitness was actually central to the End of Men, the Tucker Carlson documentary.
Oh, okay.
So it was right at the beginning of the Tucker Carlson documentary. It was kind of setting the scene for America's decline, basically, in physical fitness. So it was kind of like a what-if moment. What if President Kennedy hadn't been assassinated and he had made La Sierra the template for all high schools in the U.S.? You know, would Americans be as unhealthy as they are today? And the La Sierra thing is amazing. It's amazing. I mean, it's I think if that had been instituted nationwide, then, yeah, America would be a different country in many respects. And I think that bringing something like that back could only be a good thing. I mean, people do need to move. People do need to start moving. They do need to do exercise. They do need to eat differently. And you need to start people off young, because otherwise they're habituated to a life of a sedentary lifestyle where they're just eating processed food and junk and you know, just cultivating all sorts of bad habits. And so yes, I mean, I think that certainly a nationwide school program would be a wonderful place to start. But it is interesting, you know, that you can see that the roots of this go back at least to the 1960s. JFK saying it's a national problem. You know, people are starting to get unfit. People are starting to drop out and become, like you said, spectators on life. When actually, if you look at a picture of what people looked like in the 1960s, I mean, very few people, by comparison with today, were obese. And yet, even then, politicians, somebody like JFK, somebody far-sighted like JFK, could say, actually, I think this country's going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I think in America, it's somewhere between like 35 and 40% are obese. It's something something very high. I don't know what it's like in the UK.
It's pretty similar. I mean, it's been very noticeable, certainly within my lifetime, that I've noticed, you know, people are so much fatter than they were. I mean, I remember when I was a child at school, when I went to the equivalent of high school, secondary school in the UK, then there were about 800 people at my school. And I think there were probably one or two people who were fat, but they weren't comically fat. You know, they weren't, you wouldn't describe them as obese. They would actually just be described today probably as chubby rather than fat. And yet now, I mean, everywhere you go, if you go into the local town, you go into city, whatever, you just see fat people everywhere. I mean, it's a problem that's very clearly accelerating. And I don't know whether it's quite as bad as in the US, but I think it's probably pretty close. And places like Scotland, for example, Scotland is a seriously unhealthy country. Scotland, I think, is the most unhealthy country in Europe.
Really? That seems sad.
Yeah, it's bad in Scotland. A quarter of the adult population in Scotland are on antidepressants as well. I mean, there are serious problems in Scotland, health problems.
Well, I think it's funny that you say that, you know, some people criticize the idea that this issue could even be politically distinct. But I looked up a Pew Research article, and they have this chart on here where they ask this question. They say, whether it's good or bad that society looks up to masculine men. And then they asked if you're Republican or lean Republican versus lean Democrat. And the statistics are pretty clear. You know, it said 78% of Republicans think it's a good thing to look up to masculine men, whereas it's only 49% for Democrats. And on the bad thing, like only 20% of Republicans thought that was bad, and 48% of Democrats thought that that was a negative or a bad thing. And so, I mean, right here, this specific poll shows a distinction between how Democrats and Republicans feel on just specifically masculinity. So here's some evidence for your particular position here. And again, I don't think that these things are necessarily like directly correlated. I think it's just based on your worldview. You kind of, when you have a worldview that's democratic, from my perspective, you're kind of just following Satan. And if you actually care about society at all, then you're usually a little bit more conservative and right-leaning in general. In America, politics now, it seems like there's Democrat and Democrat light, but at least just historically speaking, Republicans were somewhat conservative and more right-leaning. But you call yourself a far-right individual. I'm kind of curious on that, because people say that Donald Trump is far right, but like from my perspective, I find that Donald Trump's kind of left, actually. Historically speaking, he's just right of the extreme that we have on the left these days. Yeah. Like, do you really think that, you know, traditionally and historically you kind of are far right, or you just kind of embrace that term?
I would probably just describe myself as a traditionalist in many respects. I mean, I think that I cleave to traditional values, fundamental traditional values that I think have been the values of the vast majority of humankind for the vast majority of human history. So I don't really consider my opinions about things like hierarchy or masculinity or whatever to be a deviation, I don't think that they're unacceptable. I think that they're the norm, actually. I think that it's leftism that's an aberration. So, I mean, I've accepted, I've come to terms with the fact, as I'm sure a lot of people on the right today, traditionalists, have, that they're going to be called every single name under the sun. You're going to be called a Nazi, you're going to be called a fascist, you're going to be called a racist and a homophobe and a bigot and all sorts of other stuff. And so actually it doesn't really matter to me. I mean, I know what I am, and I know fundamentally that I'm right. But yeah, I mean, it is, like you say, with Donald Trump, you know, I mean, if you look at Trump, actually, he's really like a 90s Democrat in many respects. I mean, and I saw a video a while back of various different politicians from both sides of the aisle talking about building a wall from the 80s through the 90s into the early 2000s. Clinton, Bush, George W. Bush, Obama, even while he was campaigning for the presidency, talking about building a border wall. I mean, these weren't extreme positions that Donald Trump has, you know, protecting America's manufacturing base, bringing manufacturing back to the U.S., building a border wall. That kind of stuff isn't, that's not fascism. That's actually just, that was just basic common sense. That was almost like a unifying issue, actually, across the political divide in years gone by. But now, political polarization being as bad as it is, and the Overton window having shifted so far to the left, Donald Trump actually is Hitler, basically, now.
I mean, what's crazy to me is, and this is a point someone else made, but I find it interesting, is in times past, you kind of had Republicans and Democrats towards the end of the political scene becoming more moderate, because they're kind of trying to just pick up those last few little votes here and there. And we have seen Donald Trump even becoming a little bit more left and kind of embracing some more liberal positions in the last few months. But the left isn't at all. Like, the left is just getting weirder and crazier. And someone was pointing out, it's like the left just thinks they're going to win no matter what. So they're not even trying to vie for votes anymore. They're just trying to get as weird and crazy as possible. Which for me, like, I feel like I'm as right wing as you could possibly get, generally speaking. But because of our climate, people label so many individuals as right wing that aren't actually right wing, in my opinion. Like, they don't really even, like, I would say I'm like way different than that person, but we're just all in this camp of just anything right of crazy and lunatic. And so it's, you know, these far right extremists. I mean, even Obama in his campaigning to be president said he believed marriage is between one man and one woman. He was advocating for, you know, some common sense, like foreign policy measures. And if that was Donald Trump's platform, like, it would actually be more right of what he is today, which is kind of crazy to me, just how fast things are kind of evolving and kind of just being driven really far left. And I appreciate anybody trying to drag us back to some level of normalcy, you know, especially on issues like masculinity. It's such an important issue. And I think when men are working out, they're increasing their testosterone, they're eating healthy, they're thinking straight, that they're going to have better policy, they're going to have better opinions, they're more willing to contend for things that matter. You know, the Bible says that we should earnestly contend for the faith, and so, you know, me being a Baptist, I think it's important to advocate for that. And so, you know, I appreciate anybody that's trying to drag us in the right direction here on these issues. I want to be sensitive to your time. I appreciate you doing an interview with us. Is there anything else that you wanted to discuss, or something else you wanted to share?
No, I think you're right. I mean, it is a very polarized time. It is a crazy time, and things do seem to be getting crazier. I mean, things were pretty crazy at the DNC. No sign that you know, that the Democrats are moving back towards a more moderate position. Just every sign that they're leaning into their crazy policies, that they want to, you know, continue with mass immigration, that they want to continue with demographic change. They want to, I mean, look, there was, in fact, actually, we haven't talked about this. This was quite funny. Just to finish up, the vasectomy bus at the DNC, you saw that, right? insane.
This is a big issue to me.
Yeah, but I mean, how on the nose is that? You know, libtards are going to the DNC, male libtards are going to the DNC and being sterilized outside on a bus. I mean, like, you know, imagine if you'd said that 20 years ago, oh, yeah, in 2004, oh, yeah, in 2024, male liberals at the DNC are going to, you know, be getting sterilized, you know, and then going in and then going into the conference to listen to the speeches.
It's,
I mean,
it's like a parody of their own.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, satire is basically becoming impossible, I think.
Yeah. It's hard to know. Like, you make fun of something and it's actually real. Like, you can't even make jokes anymore. Mm. But I mean, I've known a lot of friends and family that have decided to get a vasectomy. And I remember even getting pressure from my family. And I said, I will never get a vasectomy. And I feel like I, you know, basically slaughtered the sacred cow or something by just saying that. And I just thought it was kind of, it's just crazy how many people are being propagandized, in my opinion. And, you know, I have 6 children and, hopefully God willing, I'll have even more. Like, I'm for having big families and I'm totally against birth control, which is crazy. Cause like historically presidents would get up and say birth control was wrong and is a bad thing. And now that's been kind of forgotten, but now we have the DNC literally advocating for vasectomies. And I would be so embarrassed if the founders of our nation or even just presidents of the past came and like saw what our country turned into, just like how ashamed and embarrassed they would be of what we've turned into. And you know, a lot of this is like our grandfathers, right? This is our grandfathers and great grandfathers. And even many people in the United States are coming from a European heritage, and how much Europe has also changed for the worst in a lot of ways. And it's just sad. It's sad to see. I think that we need more people to kind of get their head screwed on straight. And honestly, we all are affected by not eating or being unhealthy. When you're fat, when you're slothful, when you're not eating well, you just can't think straight, you don't have energy, you don't want to do anything, and that's not going to fix problems. We need people to eat healthy, work out. In fact, working out actually gives you energy, which is crazy. I think a lot of people don't even realize that, but by actually lifting weights and working out, you can actually have more energy for the day than if you didn't. And so, you know, I really appreciate you coming on the show. And I want to pull up your Twitter. Is that kind of like the main thing you have that people?
Yeah, that's the main place to go. I also have a Substack, so that's raweggstack.com that you can go to where I post essays and my podcast, and then there's my magazine, which is Man's World, which is mansworldmag.online. But Twitter, if you go to any single place in Twitter, so that's raweggnationalist.com, which we're in the process of overhauling at the moment. We're redesigning that. But go to my Twitter and you'll be able to find links to everything that I do. And you'll be able to follow my posts, etc.
Great. Yeah, thanks again. And look forward to whatever new information or new videos or stuff you come out with. I need to check out that cookbook. I guess it seems contradictory to me for a guy eating raw eggs to have a cookbook, but you know.
Yeah, well, there are lots of recipes in there. So it's not just raw eggs; it's cooked eggs. It's there's some meat recipes, sauce recipes for steaks, treats, egg based treats, cocktails. There's all sorts of stuff in there, and it's also, as well as being a cookbook, it's kind of like a political manifesto as well. So that's the Eggs Benedict option. So that's my latest book, and that's about basically the plan for a global plant-based diet and why it's such a bad thing and why we need to fight back against it. So I wrote that 2 years ago, but that's my latest book, and I'm writing a new book at the moment actually. Which is due out early next year. So follow my Twitter and go on my Substack and you'll find out everything you need to know.
Well, you'll find your place home in heaven in Texas, because we love some barbecue and brisket and ribs. I love smoking ribs And I love cooking steak. And if I could have it for every meal, I would. So, and bacon, oh man, I love bacon. So, all right. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. And we look forward to, you know, all the other information you have coming out on this topic. And stay strong over there in the UK. And I'll keep following your Thank Twitter you. So you can give us some updates. I saw you did a podcast like Locust Eaters or something. Is that your friends out there, or are you just been on that show?
Yeah. So that's someone who may be familiar to American viewers. That's Sargon of Akkad. He was on Joe Rogan. He's sort of famous from the Gamergate days. He's a kind of early kind of meme war kind of figure. But yeah, I've been on their show a couple of times, and I've made a few face docs appearances, you know, showing my actual identity recently. But I'll be doing more. I did an interview with the Epoch Times, their television show Epoch TV, where I talked about my book, The Eggs Benedict Option, and yeah, I'm sure I'll probably be doing some more interviews as well in the future. Just watch my Twitter, and I post them there normally.
Well, thanks so much, Raw Egg Nationalists. And if you're ever stateside, we'll get you, you know, a cup of eggs and a steak or something. And if you're in prison, we'll just have to mail it to you. I don't know. But God bless, and hope stay safe over there in the UK, and keep fighting the good fight. And thanks for your time.
Likewise. Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for our special episode on the Baptist bias. Thanks, guys, for tuning in. And make sure to, you know, eat some healthy food. We need some more masculinity in this world, not less. God bless. Have a good night.